As spring slowly starts to roll in, the Total Rugby League show returns for another hour of Rugby League chatter. And joining me round the table this week, the Rowdy Bunch. We're joined by Mr. Matthew Shaw.
Not rowdy.
See, he started already. Alex Davies is here. And Aaron Bowers here as well.
Talk about the championship.
Let's talk about the championship. Yeah, of course we are.
Sorry.
I thought we'd had some correspondence in. It's because Halifax are in fifth now, isn't it? Right, okay, that makes
after
sense.
After how many weeks of the season? Brilliant.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Total Rugby League show. As well as discussing Halifax, we're also going to be talking Wheelchair Rugby League later, as we're joined by the chair of England Wheelchair Rugby League, Martin Coyd, to talk about the brand new season. We've also got Stephen Neal coming on, Barrow Raiders chairman, for their fantastic community initiative that they're rolling out in the weeks to come. And we've also got Phil Hodgson joining us shortly for a season preview for the conference season. But let's kick things off starting round, what number are we on now? Round five.
Five already.
Of Super League and the inevitable round six, which is coming our way this weekend. Starting off on Thursday, Leeds v Toronto.
Good.
Who wants to go first?
Leeds win.
Good.
Now, Martin said in his column that Toronto have had a tough start, Matthew.
They've played the five teams that finished in the top five last year. Admittedly, one is Salford, who have struggled otherwise. But the facts are the facts. They've played the top five from last year. I think the concern for me was, having watched that St. Helens game, that looked to me like a step backwards.
Yeah, it felt like they were getting closer week on week, didn't you? Yeah, but then that was a huge setback.
That was the first one where they'd not come close at all in the game.
Look, they were playing St. Helens, don't get me wrong, but I think the thing that got me a little bit was, I've agreed with Brian McDermott after every press conference, you know, they are getting better, they've improved.
He said
this week the same. I'm like, yeah, I didn't see that today. I was struggling to see what he'd seen from that performance that encouraged him. I think the battle for Toronto is not this week. I think it's the 6 weeks following this game.
Okay.
Because that's when, on paper, they have more winnable games. But the fact that if they lose this week, those winnable games don't become must-win, but becomes important for them to win.
There's no panic yet, is there?
No, but said it last week, the importance of just getting that first win, probably for internal self-belief, a bit of confidence, shot in the arm in that regard, is quite big. Everyone else is off the mark. And while there are a couple of teams down there in particular who do look like they will struggle alongside Toronto all season, if they jag a couple of wins in the next couple of weeks and Toronto continue to lose, by the time you get to Easter, if they're 4 or even 6 points adrift at the bottom, I know they're going to have a huge advantage going back to Canada, but they're almost going to be in position where they're having to win a large portion of the home games and beat some of the best teams in the comp in Canada to give themselves a chance. So they just need that first win sooner rather than later. Whether they'll get it this week, I'm not sure, because I liked what I saw from Leeds last week.
Now let's talk about Leeds, because admittedly Toronto have played the top five from last season. Leeds were in that top five, but they're looking like they might be this year.
Well,
good segue. I like that question.
Good. The game against Warrington, they thoroughly dominated it. Up the middle, round the sides and the halves, everywhere.
At fullback?
Yeah. Richie Miller were great. Apart from a little bit of a slow start under the high ball.
Dropped one ball.
But yeah.
Threw one into touch. Other than that, it was very good.
It was fantastic.
Now, just like Toronto got nothing to worry about, is it too early to be a bit jubilant about Leeds?
Yeah. Well, yes, it is. Because the other home game, they got smashed by Hull. So yeah. they've been both great and bad. But as bad they were against Hull, they were brilliant against Warrington.
I think at this moment in time, you would look at Leeds and say, generally over the first 5 weeks, they've pretty much got better, in the sense of, I think the worst performance was in round one and the best was in round five. Salford, they played Salford early doors, they were slow, weren't they? Were they losing early on and then they came back to win? That was their most complete performance so far. So you've got two teams really this week, one who appears to be going in the right direction and edging closer to a complete performance. And Toronto had a big setback last week. So on that basis, it's hard to see where a win's coming from. It'll be interesting to see how much pressure Toronto put Myler under at fullback. He's probably going to play there. There's no Walker. We did see a couple of fallacies in his game. You know, he did drop that high ball, as you say. There was a couple of errors. However, on the whole, he was very good. I think, again, if he if he performs alongside Louis and Gale, who has been excellent. Gale's been absolutely phenomenal so far this season. It's hard to look past Leeds.
I think the Rhino showed how easy rugby is. You just have to work hard down the middle.
We should say sending our best wishes to Stevie Ward as well, because it's...
Fellow that's rotten luck, don't he?
That's the game on TV on Thursday night, Leeds against Toronto. The game on Friday night, Warrington against Castleford. Let's talk about Warrington firstly. What did we read from that defeat to Leeds?
Well, it was concerning, with particularly with up and Austin. But having said that, having played with a pack that was dominated in the way they were, but still, Widdup and Austin's performance was worrying for them.
Widdup, look, I don't think there was one good player in that Warrington team. Widdup and Austin were not exempt from that. However, how you expect halfbacks to play behind such an abject forward performance is beyond me. The forwards were absolutely destroyed.
And it was showed in that prior hit on Austin fairly early on, because he just didn't have any time on the ball, because he'd been dominated in the tackle. The line speed was there and he got absolutely smashed.
The concern for me, if I was Warrington, would be that it's going to take him some time to adapt, but he's fallen out of the England circle.
Whatever this group is, we're calling it.
And it's only one man's opinion. You know,
there's a lot of time between now and the Ashes.
For sure. But he hasn't set the world alight as you would suspect Warrington would have hoped. The results away from home still remain an issue.
But just to say, I mean, that nearly there by Leeds is not all down to Widdup, is it?
He's played two games.
Those two games,
have they been enough to move him out of that setup?
Well, according to
Sean Wayne.
Look at who they're playing on Friday night. Rankin, Richardson, Truman and McShane, who've played every game together. And while, again, it's not an excuse for a 30-odd nil defeat, there's been a hell of a lot of changes in that spine in just 4 or 5 weeks, which is going to impact on fluidity, it's going to impact on relationships and chemistry and things like that. While it wasn't the reason they lost, far from it, as Matt says, they were absolutely bullied in the pack, and they need to sort that out ASAP. I think it is going to be a few weeks until you see Widdup and Austin really getting a feel for each other.
Let's face it, they've both spent their careers in Australia. They are going to be hard surface players. They're just going to be.
There's a few in that Warrington pack that are underperforming. Daryl Clark actually said after the game,
very damning, wasn't it?
Yeah, they should be embarrassed. There's a few individuals that should be embarrassed, which pretty strong stuff to say after round five. But you know, with the standards they set there and the expectations they have, that's probably all they could say after a performance as miserable as that.
Haven't won away since July,
and that was at London.
And the paper's reporting as well that Declan Patton's on his way as well.
Seem like it. Yeah, well, he's got no future there.
Look, let's be honest. The writing was on the wall for him when, without Widdup, they decided to move Ratchford out of his strongest position and put in a rookie at fullback rather than just slot Patton.
Just like for liking. I watched him play for Widnes on Sunday night on our league, and he was playing hooker, wasn't he? His career's just not in the right place at the moment. That's not, you know, he's playing hooker for a part-time championship team. It's quite a fall from grace. I think he just needs someone to take a punt on him.
Who is going to be that someone?
I don't know. Wakefield look like a good fit, don't they?
We're way off that magical period that we had last season, where there was loads of transfers and stuff.
It'd be interesting to see how it does if he gets a full-time place where he's just in the team, because he's never had that.
Things just don't work out sometimes. He just needs to move on and draw a line under it now. I'm pretty sure, from what we've all heard, that Warrington are open to letting him leave. So, that's one that you would expect to get a line drawn under it soon.
Well, Friday night's game, Warrington against Castleford. Alex, Castleford, they won against Hull KR last weekend.
They did, yes.
They keep winning.
It was a similar performance to the Wakefield one. They had enough in the second half that it turned it round and won fairly comfortably.
What's your general impression of the mood at Castleford? Because it seems like a very good start to the season.
It is a good start. None of the performances have been brilliant, but they've been enough. They've won all these games fairly comfortably, apart from the Wigan one. They've won all the games with a decent margin, but there is a lot of room for improvement. I think Aaron touched on it, the spine being stable has been a massive difference from this year to last year, because last year it was constantly evolving.
But Shane looks brilliant.
And he does.
Back to his best.
Last year, I thought he was his discipline. Yeah. He let that go last year, but this year he's just concentrating on his rugby. works hard out of the middle, but he's got a great pack to work
credit hard. To Rankin as well, because that looked like the big issue in pre-season, whether they would end up relenting and moving Matautia into fullback and Blair to centre. But again, you know, we've all doubted Darryl Powell, but he's got a balance right there. He's sort of seen Blair as a bit of a back row moving forward.
Rankin's a good player.
Rankin is a good player, but
he's elusive running. He's good under the high ball. He gives you 100%.
The problem he's had is most places he's been, certainly here, Hull FC and Huddersfield, you've never been quite sure whether he's been a fullback or a halfback, and that utility value can sometimes be an asset for a player, but sometimes it can also be their undoing, really, that you're never quite sure what he is. You know, look at Richie Myler's now, looks like he's going into that mould at Leeds, and it's going to work for him. Ryan Hampshire is another one. You're never quite sure where he is, but Cass seems to have nailed the colours to the mast. He's got the number one shirt, hasn't he, I think?
It's the same principle with Matautia. Again, he's got the utility value, but Powell seems to say, right, you are playing centre.
But Matautia, for me, this is what
he's played centre all his career.
You know, how many times... Not on the show did we have that conversation. Cass, about
he didn't even play fullback at Leeds, did he? Or did he?
A little bit.
But he was predominantly a centre.
I mean, we had this conversation all the time. Didn't he's a centre. He looks like a centre, and he's playing centre, and he's playing really well. Yeah.
The only one that's sort of moving around a bit is Blair, but he's done well in both positions.
Yeah, he has. Yeah, and Millington still just. I love Millington. Yeah. Probably my favourite forward to watch in Super League.
He was very good on
it. Yeah, he's great, and he comes off the bench and has an impact. But he's getting on.
Again, they've found him a role, though, haven't they? They've evolved him. You know, he was a starting forward for a number of years.
I think the challenge comes for Cass now, if we're honest.
This is a big test.
They've played the three teams that I think the majority suspected would be the bottom three: Wakefield, Hull KR, and Toronto.
Someone in this room tipped Castleford to finish fourth bottom.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that at the minute.
What?
Wakefield.
But like Roy Keane.
They've played the three teams that most people tip to finish in the bottom.
Three of the teams.
But they also beat Wigan and no one else.
Yeah, they beat Wigan.
So what happens if they beat Warrington?
Then I may have to revise bottom ninth.
It's a big game Friday night because there's going to be a load of pressure on Warrington.
Yeah.
And I think
Cass go in as a favourite.
Out of all the games this week, that's the hardest one to call.
Let's not forget that Warrington have won both the games at home this year, including a victory over St Helens. Yeah. So, you know.
That's Friday night's TV game, Warrington against Castleford. Also on Friday night, it should have been Saturday, but it's not. There's three matches on Friday night now.
Duh.
I know, after last week's good start. There is. Wakefield against Hull we'll go to next. What does that win over Salford tell us about Wakefield?
That's a good win, though.
That's a point. You said the three teams expected to be at the bottom and you put Wakefield
above
Salford.
Most
people had Wakefield, Hull KR and Toronto as the bottom three.
Not Huddersfield?
Most people had Wakefield, Hull KR and Toronto.
All right, to be fair, I think Matthew was saying Huddersfield were the dark horses for the playoffs. I thought
if there was going to be a surprise package this year, I thought what does it say
about Wakefield? They're probably too good to, in my opinion, be in that mix to go down this year, although they won't be a million miles off it. I think they'll be in the bottom five, bottom six, but they won't be entrenched in a battle at the bottom, I don't think.
I mean, we were talking last week about the fact they've had to employ a massive squad. It paid dividends, didn't it, against Salford? Because they're a fair few out.
Yeah, which again, Matt's alluded to before, rightly, is a bit of a problem for them. They just can't seem to get any sort of settled side out from one week to the next. I would think Walker...
Keep that side.
Yeah. Walker getting in the side now is big for them because he's the guy that, you know, they have had a few different people playing fullback in recent years, and I think he's the guy that they've seen now that he could play fullback for this club for the next 3 or 4 years.
He's a specialist fullback, isn't he?
Yeah, he's an out-and-out fullback. It depends how far off Brough is. It sounds like they're going to get a couple more back, actually, this week. They're talking about Fifita maybe being back. I think Arona's not far off. So they're getting close. Look, having lost... There's not many must-win games in the first 6 weeks, but having lost to Hull KR early doors, I think beating Salford probably just calms things down a little bit. If they had lost to Salford and Hull KR... You would be worrying for them a little bit, but I think that probably just convinces me that they're probably just going to be a fraction too good.
It was a result that sets up your next 3 or 4 weeks for both teams, because it just eases pressure now for a couple of weeks on Wakefield, where for Salford there's now little bit more pressure on them to go get a win.
Hull are...
I was going to say, is the pressure on Hull?
They're an odd team. He's seen them a few times this year.
You can't be winning it by 18 points in the second half at home and lose.
It was done.
And they won it twice.
It was done.
They won it again when Sneed kicked the drop goal.
Yeah, they won it
again.
Aaron, you were there.
Yeah.
You've seen them a few times, and I'm judging from afar on Hull. I've only seen them in the derby. We've said for the last couple of weeks, it seems when there's a little bit of adversity...
When the chips are down.
They crumble.
Yeah.
Was that the case again on Sunday?
Yeah.
Well, that's
although they dug out a drop goal right at the end.
Well, yeah, but then somehow conspired to lose the game.
So it's three games running then.
They've got a problem with adversity in that they were cruising at 28-10. Mm. That Catalan's try that made it 28-16 came from absolutely nowhere. And from there, Catalan scored off the next set and then Hull just completely fell apart. Defensively, they were a mess. There were players shooting out of the line that... There are some adversity issues there. And for a squad with as much experience, I'm guessing off the top of my head, there can't be many more experienced squads out there than Hull. Certainly experienced packs. Scott Taylor, Danny Houghton, Maya Fanu has been around, Manu Mao, Chris Satie. There's a hell of a lot of experience there. And for them to fall apart in the last stages of three games now, I think it is, because Wigan, the final quarter was their undoing. St Helens was a similar story. The worry is that They're aspiring to win the grand final this year, and they have lost to probably three of the teams that most are expecting to be in the mix for the grand final in three straight weeks: St Helens, Wigan, and Catalans, which is a pretty damning indictment on where they are. So, I think this is a bigger game for Hull than Wakefield on Friday night.
Aaron touched on it there. Having that period, Hull have had periods in these games where they've conceded a lot of points.
18 like points in 8 minutes.
That Saints game, they didn't concede 4 tries in about 10 minutes.
I mean, I've written down here because I knew, you know, the collapse at the end would be the main talking point, but they have scored, they did score 29 points.
Yeah, they did. They conceded 34. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I know, I'm just saying that. They're not.
Your attempts to play devil's advocate here aren't
If you score 29 points, you should win the game. But
there was one positive for them on Sunday, it's that Albert Kelly came in and looked like the standoff they've been missing, unfortunately, for Jake Connor.
Speaking of Jake Connor, no Jake Connor in the England invite slash...
I've got that to talk about at the end in any other business.
Okay.
If there was a match, it would be front and centre, but it's just a squad, isn't it? It's just...
Correct.
Yeah. So at the end, we'll do that. Anyway, also on Friday night, St Helens against Huddersfield. Oh. The wheels have come off the Huddersfield. No, I'm only joking.
Top five, I think.
That was another case of conceding a whole lot of points in a short
season. Caesar got binned, and was it
Gareth Walker in his match report just said one yellow card, and that was enough. Because then Wigan just pounced, didn't they?
Yeah.
Tell me if I'm reading too much into it. Matt, you know Huddersfield more than most. Is it more worrying that it was Caesar who was simbing and they completely fell apart?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's worrying, that, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Because he has, even in the early weeks, he's very much looked like the guy who's held them together in a good way. You know, he's made a real influence on them. But when he's not on the field for 10 minutes, let alone a full game, or 2 weeks, they fell apart.
We've all been keen to stress, haven't we, that we can't judge any team at this stage of the year, but you can make observations.
Which is all we're doing, incidentally, listener at home.
And, you know, the fact that Huddersfield fell apart so horrendously when Caesar wasn't on the pitch... It leaves a massive question mark hanging over there.
Isn't that just inevitable with a player of that calibre?
Not
to the extent of 18 points in 5 minutes, or whatever it was.
Have a yellow card and expect your team to.
It's not just you're obviously missing the player and a player as well, aren't you? Against one of the top teams in the competition.
20 points in 10 minutes.
It's a collapse. I'll give you that.
It's also worth pointing out that one of those tries. Hang on, because after 2 weeks of the season, everyone had decided try of the season had been won.
I hadn't.
Oh, hang on.
No, I had not.
The whole world was like, it's try of the
just
season.
Just to say...
Liam Marshall is currently leading the race for try of the season.
I've got that bit written down here for when we talk about Wigan, and I'll say that it's in the top two.
But there's individual efforts and there's team efforts.
No, there's just try of the season.
Liam Marshall was an unbelievable individual effort, and that was a brilliant team effort. They're different. I think they're very, very different. They're both equally brilliant.
Well, every try is different. Can't just make every try of the season.
There's two
World Rugby tweeted out yet?
No.
No, that's a shame. Well, anyway.
St Helens will win.
St Helens. Under Christian Wolf, have you noticed a difference in how they're playing now compared to last season? What's the tangible change that you've noticed?
There is one big difference in that Coote hasn't been there for most of the season, so that's probably difficult to sort of completely work out how different things are. Robbie was missing a lot as well. Yeah.
Which they didn't really last year much.
I think they've handled it okay for the most part.
Well, they've lost one game.
That's the only blip, isn't it?
And they were competitive in the World Cup Challenge. Lights of Bentley at centre look. You know, he's done a great job.
Wigan have been impressive, barring one horror show, but Saints are still the benchmark.
Okay. Then Saturday, Catalans against Salford. Where should we start? We'll start with the home team. Have they cracked their ways?
You
never committed yourself in the match report, Aaron.
No, that's because we've been here a million times before in the, 13, 14 years Catalans have been in the league. The nature of the win, though, to be dead and buried and find a way to win was not something I've seen from Catalans very often. Still very early in the season, but every time I've seen him play, Sam Tomkins looks absolutely phenomenal. There's been a lot of talk on Folau and even Maloney as a secondary to that. I wonder if that's just allowed Tomkins to just go under the radar and do what he does best, because I tell you what, they wouldn't have won that game if he wasn't on the field on Sunday.
I know what we said about Hull and the Catalan game, but the standard of tries from both teams in that game was very, very impressive, I thought.
I think with Catalan, what you would say is, if they were 28-10 down like that last year, I go back to Headingley.
Salford.
It turns into 40-50 points. Yeah. So again, as an observation, that seems more... The manner in which they win seems much more significant than the fact they actually won it itself.
They've won in England plenty of times before, but I'm not sure they've won in England in that manner many times.
No.
That was, for me, the most encouraging thing.
Salford.
Yeah, a bit worrying, isn't it?
What's changed? They've lost a couple of players. What has changed?
Well, because
they
brought the best in.
It was a huge amount
of
players.
They lost arguably the best back row in the comp last year.
And the best player.
Well, they brought in a decent calibre in. So.
Yeah, but it's still a big turnover.
I've seen enough from Salford in the games I've seen to not be awfully worried.
Yeah, they're competing.
But what you would say is that they're already kind of sort of chasing.
Well, they've lost at home to... I know, again, you're going to say Huddersfield are an exception, but they've lost at home to Huddersfield and they've lost at home to Wakefield already. Yeah.
And only just beat Toronto. So, you know,
there are some underlying signs that are quite worrying in Salford's performances. Matt's right, they are competing, but they've lost a couple of big games already and big games at home. This one this weekend... I won't ever say it's a free hit, but
it is a free hit, isn't it?
It's as close to a free hit as you're probably likely to get.
Let's not forget that
they won there last year.
Salford didn't set the world alight at the start of last season either. You know, they didn't win. I felt maybe they won one more game than they've got now. I think they won two of the first five. And if you look at their results at the start of last season, it was incredibly similar, losing narrowly in games. I'm taking out the St. Helens game, obviously.
But we all know what the big difference is between this year and last year.
Yeah. Look,
it's not all Jackson Hastings, surely.
Yeah, but it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's not an exaggeration to say he pulled them out of a fair few holes on his own last year. And they haven't got a player of that ability and calibre to call on this time around, which is going to cost them a fair few
wins. I think the concern I have when I look at Salford's team, I think they've got a lot of good, dependable players, but who brings, as Aaron says, the X factor.
We said in the early weeks of the season that the onus was really on Lolla here to take that. Yeah. He was looking forward to seeing how he went, but he hasn't quite done that yet.
It's nine levels.
I was about to say a lot seems to be resting on Evels' shoulders.
Evels is superb. Yeah. Every time I watch him, he's, for me, it's a straight shootout, in my opinion, between him and Tomkins for England.
I'd have Tomkins somewhere in front of everyone else at the minute. But he's certainly, if you were to have a top three...
I'm cutting Hardacre as a centre.
All right. Yeah, and I think he will be because he's going to play there for most of the year. Tomkins is a way ahead, but Evels is certainly in the mix, yeah.
And finally for this weekend's matches, in round 6 of Super League, Wigan against Hull KR. Firstly, let's talk about Hull KR.
Yeah. I've seen him a lot.
Tony Smith is still searching for players.
Yeah, I think he may be for a while.
Yeah.
What type of players is he after?
A middle. And it's very, 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 very clear why.
because they are soft. Not good enough down the middle. It's true. I don't think their middles are bad players, but none of them are just big units, other than Garbutt, who unfortunately is just not, as we keep saying, he's not going to play enough games or enough time.
And they lost, unfortunately, one of their other big units, didn't they, Masoli?
Yeah, they've got some big players. Like in not so much big in size, but big in performance levels to come back. George Lawler was an unsung hero for them last year.
God, this is an inexperienced team. I'm just looking.
Robbie Mulhern is another big player for them. He was in England set up not too long ago. But the issue is none of them fix the problem, which is they aren't big players.
They've also got a lack of leaders. Look at the team. All right, the three-quarter line of Minikin, Kenny Dowell, Lynette and Crooks is very experienced. Will Dagger at fullback, Joe Keyes, Ryan Brayley, Daniel Murray, Jez Litton, Will Mayer, Matty G, Matty Stoughton, Dean Adler, bench, Elliot Minchella, not played a lot of Super League, Owen Harris and Kyle Trout, Mitch Garbutt. Yeah. They're not bad players. There's just not a lot of experience in your pack.
I think one of the concerns I raised about Hull KR's recruitment was that I thought what they've tried to do is the right thing to go. They've spent so many years buying players at 30 odd and paying over the odds to get them, and they had to get out of that cycle. They've tried to do it, and it's the right thing
if
to do.
If we were in licensing now, we'd be saying,
oh, brilliant.
We'd be saying, okay, in a few years, good luck
100%.
To them.
But the problem is, for me, they've gone from one extreme to the other. Mm. It had to be
a process.
It had to be a process of 3 years for me where they freshen up the team. They got rid of 8 players over the age of 30 between June and the off season.
You could see a million miles off what they're trying to do.
And I appreciate what they're trying to do.
But there's too much of a sea change.
Yeah. And you've got too many players in there that don't have enough level, and probably at this moment in time in their careers, the adequate quality to win enough games.
Until they get, they'll be expecting Kenny Dowell to do all that. Yeah. Just arrived in the
club. Until they get one, games. Until they get one or at least, or maybe even two senior experienced forwards with a bit of size in.
Well, Wigan away for Hull KR this weekend. Adrian Lamb, special mention to Liam Marshall.
Try the season.
Quality.
So far. It's a good try. Do you know what? I never thought I'd say this 18 months ago, but I'm really looking forward to going to watch Wigan on Sunday. We've got the best winger back as well now in Manfredi, haven't they? Which is big for
he's
them.
Class.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, in over Burgess.
He's in the England.
How on earth has he come back after another serious injury and playing at the level he is?
Phenomenal.
No disrespect to the other teams who I'm not mentioning here, but St Helens and Wigan, is there much of a difference between the two of them?
No, probably not at this moment in time. I might just take the contrary view to Matt for a change and say that actually I probably have Wigan just a nose in front of St Helens at the minute.
But the difference is that Saints are the champions.
Not quite forget with Wigan, they were unconvincing in victory over a 12-man Warrington. They were.
Was that the Warrington that Saints got nilled against?
But they were, you know, they were horrendous. They were horrendous against Castleford. Who did they play the week after? They weren't brilliant in that.
Toronto, were it?
Yeah,
Toronto. Yeah, you know. Yeah, but now they've played well the last 2 weeks. They've played well the last 2 weeks. Let's not. For me, Saints are still the team to win.
5 weeks in, I'd give the edge to Wigan, but there's 24 rounds to go.
Absolutely.
That Good Friday. If they both carry on the way they are, Good Friday's going
to
be good.
Oh, yeah.
Before we get to Championship, a team who were in Championship last season who got relegated into League One have made a big splash this week with a fantastic announcement, in my humble opinion. The Barrow Raiders, free season tickets delivered to every kid in every South Cumbrian school, free £5 food vouchers for paying adult with 2 kids, one free adult for admission with 10 kids, and aiming to have a curtain raiser every home game where it'll be free admission if you arrive there in time. And for more on this fantastic news, on Tuesday night, I caught up with the chairman of the Barrow Raiders. Here's Steve Neal.
You know, we've had 50,000 plus views on Twitter, plenty of famous rugby league names retweeting. Facebook's about 40,000 views, so we've got a good reach. Tremendous response in the town itself. And hopefully, you know, we'll be rewarded with a decent crowd. But it's about building the crowd throughout the season, so it might not be an instant hit, but we'll be getting on. You know, obviously we're offering, you know, community clubs and sports teams, etc., free entrance for the children, but also for the adults if they bring a certain number of children. So it's a big thing for us, and hopefully, you know, we've had this mission about growing the crowds, and hopefully will be rewarded for our efforts.
And obviously, you know, a lot of clubs, when they get relegated from a division, they want to bounce back. But clearly what you've put down here is that you don't just want to bounce back, but you want to bounce back with a vengeance, really, with a huge sense of momentum from all corners of the club. Is that the thinking behind this, mainly?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously our focus is on bouncing back in terms of promotion on the field, but I've always said that there's no point even playing Super League if I'm playing in front of 1,000 fans. I've got to grow the club. We're doing some fantastic work in the community. We're working with the community clubs as well. So just raising awareness of the rugby league in the town. As I said, some fantastic community work that we're doing at the moment. We're growing that team. So we're just getting rugby league out there, getting the brand out there, getting Barrow Raiders out there, and hopefully, you know, we'll grow organically. The crowds will start to rise, and we can really push on, get promotion that we want, although it's no foregone conclusions from some really good teams in this league. But hopefully we'll get the promotion and we'll come up with momentum and we'll really make a good stab of establishing ourselves as a decent championship club, which is the next stage of where we want to be. But you know, where we are at the moment, we're in League One, but that's not a negative. We'll probably start winning a few more games than last year. And as I said, building that momentum with a new crowd, winning rugby, hopefully, and a few smiles on young faces, hopefully. Hopefully we can start to grow the club in the way that we want to.
Now, you touched upon, the great community work that's been done already. But, you know, all these things like free season tickets being delivered to every kid in a South Cumbrian school. I mean, the logistics behind this. I mean, it's all right, having a board meeting and saying these are what we're going to be doing. But to carry out this is some operation, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I saw a press article last week that Barrow Raiders are distributing hundreds of tickets to local school children. Well, in reality, it's over 11,000 have gone out. So it's not just a few hundred, 11,000 tickets, South Cumbria. And then we're getting messages from schools further afield, getting it even out towards, you know, Grangeover Sands and Kendall and places like that. And said, you know, can we get involved? And absolutely. So we're going to spread our reach even further. And if we can hit, you know, places as far away as Kendall, because we've got that market, really. There's no rugby league clubs in any great locality to us. So it's a massive opportunity. And then there's all that untapped potential in the Lake District. Summer rugby allows maybe that we can target holiday makers. So that might be something that, again, that we can go to in the summer. But logistically, as you say, it's been a challenge. We've had our community team running around, as I say, every single school in Cumbria, from reception up to year 11. And as I say, it's quite a bit, you know, we are quite a big area. If you count the whole of South Cumbria, we're close to 100,000 people. So we have got that catchment, and great work by our community teams. They've been batching the tickets into class sizes, even just to make the job easier for some of the overworked schools. It's not just turning up the door and throwing 1,000 tickets there. We understand what they have to do. So, it's been a great effort, mainly from our community team, I have to say, and they've done a fantastic job for us.
The Coventry game's coming up now; it's looming large. So, what's your sense on what the crowd's going to be? Because it seems like it's not just going to be any old crowd. It's going to be no disrespect to the regulars, but it's going to be a bouncing young audience, isn't it?
Well, that's the plan. Obviously, we just hope that we're supported. I've asked all our fans this week on social media, said, look, you're now our marketing team. Let's tell everybody about these offers that we've got on. And we've got 15,000 people following us on Facebook and a similar number on Twitter. And I've said, look, you know, let's get this message out about these offers that are on the table, and please be behind marketing team for me, because, you know, I've got 8 board members. We could get around so many and make contact, but if I can get 15,000 people doing the same job, you know, that'd be tremendous. And if we can just grow the crowds, you know, we were 1,400 average last year. We probably expected to fall, as you do with a relegation, maybe to 1,000. But really, really, we want to get up towards 2,000. I'd be delighted if we're heading in that direction to start with. But we won't stop. We'll keep pushing this. We'll keep working, you know, week after week. You mentioned the curtain raisers.
Yes.
We've got a couple lined up. We've got a couple of community clubs at under 8. They're going to start us off just after midday. And then we've got our Barrow Ladies, who are going to do an exhibition game, more of a trial game. they're almost doing it as a recruitment campaign themselves before the start of their season. So we're going to probably see two teams lining up who are both from Barrow Ladies, and it's a great opportunity to see the ladies in action because that's a growth area of the game as well. So I'm looking forward to it, really am.
Yeah, it's going to be a cracking afternoon, that's for sure. And I was just going to mention about the whole package, really, if I can use that term. You know, the fact you're doing the community stuff, you're going out into schools. Like you say, the reach of Barrow Raiders is going, just from this exercise, is going further into the lakes and beyond. And it's the rugby league is the most important thing, isn't it, in all this? And you're touching upon a curtain raisers featuring clubs with their under eights playing. I mean, it's all superb stuff. And I noticed in the week as well, Paul Crary was at the college game. It's all heading in the right direction. And you wouldn't think, you know, this is a post-relegation club. It's really bouncing at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. We've managed, you know, we did get relegated, but we've got to turn a negative into a positive. We've took the opportunity to, you know, revitalise the club. And it's so easy to feel sorry for ourselves and, you know, sack the coach and get rid of the players and moan and complain and whatever. But we haven't done that. You know, we are where we are in terms of relegation. But, you know, let's turn it into a positive. You know, regrow the club. And that's what we've aimed to do. We've put these plans in place. We've sat down with planning meetings at a board level. And there's two options. Feel sorry for yourself. Well, let's get on with making this club a real success. And, you know, we've got a fantastic board. We know we have to work hard, and we are working hard. And, some, as I say, some really good people and some really good ideas. And we're probably leading the way in terms of, you know, ideas coming out of the club. We get, as I said, really good press from other clubs. And maybe they're looking at us and thinking, yeah, Barrow Raiders, what they're doing. And that's nice. You know, from our point of view, we're trailblazing. And hopefully the game will look at us and they maybe say, look at Barrow, look at what they're doing. And by all means, follow, because that'll be a compliment, won't it?
Steve Neal there, chairman of the Barrow Raiders. Fantastic stuff. Barrow Raiders looking to get back to Championship, already in Championship for Same now way. Anyway, trying to leave via the top door. To lose Olympique, top of the table, 4-4, a convincing win at Whitehaven at the weekend.
Yeah, big result was Ealing, wasn't it?
Liam Featherstone, 3-3, Featherstone with that great win, yeah, at London Broncos. Dewsbury, you were there, weren't you, against Widnes?
They were really good. They're just hard. They run hard. They tackle hard.
Paul Sykes was good.
And then they kick, and then they've got two wily old foxes off the back who just pull the strings. They look like a decent team. They'll go all right, Jews, beyond that evidence.
Sheffield got their first league win of the season with an Isaac Farrell drop goal right towards the end. Golden
Batley
Point.
Got a losing point, yeah.
And finally, Halifax are in fifth.
Don't go in Halifax Town Centre this weekend. The bus is out.
Pretty sure.
the bus is out.
Remember when
around the town centre.
Remember when someone
past
made
liquid.
Remember when it's called Attic now, please.
I'm old.
Remember when someone around this table said this was a relegation battle.
Well, it's good job they won it then, innit?
On another note, on a more serious note, York, no wins.
I think we both said, didn't we, privately, Priest, that they would suffer a bit with second season syndrome. But I don't know if we thought they'd be quite...
Still thought they'd be in the playoff, mate.
I had them around mid-table, but there's a long way to go.
I mentioned for York.
Who did they play this weekend?
Well, how many games have they played? They played three games. One of them was against Toulouse, the other one against Lee, the other one against Halifax.
They've had to go to Halifax as well, which obviously And, you know, in contrast, on Toulouse, they've played Sheffield, Whitehaven, Batley.
Yeah.
There's very rarely... off games, bad games in the Championship. York London this week as well.
Yeah.
York not London out of the cup in London a couple of weeks ago. So
York need a win.
York do need a win. Yeah.
But Widnes as well. You know, who have they got this week?
Whitehaven.
Whitehaven
at home.
You know, they've now lost two. It's already the pre-season predictions that the top four was going to be the top four.
It's two leagues within a league, isn't it?
Toulouse, Lee, Fev, London.
Even London
look like they're going to be the top.
Tell
four.
You what though, that race for the fifth spot. It's pretty.
No, we've only played.
That's all right.
But,
yeah, but
you
that,
could tell.
Yeah,
you could tell.
Says,
you know, clubs like Dewsbury and Swindon are going to be
all
right.
The general belief
so.
Was it? The four would be the four.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at
three or four.
Widnes, York, Halifax, potentially
some argue Bradford,
like a Bolter or something, yeah,
you know, could push into the five, and it's looking like
that's already looking like the most intriguing thing about the Championship, who gets squeezed in with the big four.
Well, we'll talk about League One in a second, but just to talk about Wheelchair Rugby League now, and that season kicks off this weekend with 23 teams starting the new season. It's just growing and growing and growing, this version of the sport. And on Tuesday, I caught up with the chair of England Rugby League. Here's Martin Coyd.
It's absolutely exciting. We have our Wheelchair Fours, which is the same principle as the NRL Nines, if you like. So a short-sided, short-duration games. We had it last weekend in Wigan at Robin Park, and we had more teams and more players and more match officials and more everything, including quality, than the year before. So, every year we got some growth, and we're just in a great place with three competitions this year, Super League, Championship and Development. So all good on all fronts.
Yeah, absolutely. A phenomenal growth in the sport. 23 teams to compete in the brand new season. I mean, last year was a spectacular year to begin with. So how much of a springboard has last year given you for this season, do you feel?
I think last year, coupled with the World Cup next year, is raising the profile of the game. And, you know, as soon as people see it, they get excited because it so resembles the running game version of rugby league. It's immediately recognisable to our people. The 2019 season, domestically and internationally, was our best ever. We had our best level of competition with the club games and two magnificent finals days, because in the finals days we have, you know, the Championship level and the Super League level. So there's always four matches, or there's two matches on each day, and that was great. And people are going away saying, wow. And then internationally was our most successful season, with a tour to France and a first ever Ashes tour, and with great media support. Actually, it's raising the profile of the game, and you know, people are coming to see what Wheelchair Rugby League is all about and having a go.
Yes, absolutely. And when it comes to the geographical footprint of the sport as well, that too is very, very impressive, with teams pretty much scattered all the way through the country.
Yeah, I'm excited by Ebba Vale from South Wales coming on board this year. And on the 4th of April, we're running our first taste today at Bedford Tigers, who've been doing great things for years in the community game. And are going to be our next club. And it starts to fill the gap between the southeast corner and the north of England. And these gaps are starting to get filled, and it makes growing the game much easier with some shorter distances to travel.
And one of the leading lights of Wheelchair Rugby League is technically an expansion club in North Wales Crusaders, who've got teams in all three tiers.
Yeah, they're remarkable. Steve Jones and Madge, Mark Jones down there, along with a host of other great volunteers, are doing something special. And they're very proudly Welsh as well. You know, before the matches, we have a cappella versions of Land of My Fathers, which is just wonderful. It's a great place to go. They're playing some good football as well, so they're getting everything right down there.
And when it comes to the international game as well, when this show airs, there should be a squad announced as well. So, like you touched upon, it is these clubs are developing players as well for the international game.
Absolutely. The door is open right up until, you know, just before World Cup, for everybody to stake their case. And the Wheelchair Fours at the weekend is also the national trial, and we'll be announcing a national performance squad this weekend. I've been supporting the coaches in selecting the team. I'm thrilled that we are bringing new people on, and it was great to see Wakefield Trinity, for example, at the Wheelchair Fours, just in a observer capacity. But they've gone away excited, and Wakefield Trinity will be joining the Wheelchair Evolution in the very near future.
And when it comes to the season to come as well, like you say, what are you most looking forward to this season, do you feel? Or is it just the growth continuing, I guess?
There are a couple of highlights for me. The Super League promises to be the best ever. And one of the things we need is we're building towards the World Cup. And, you know, we have two international series this year, with the French coming over in June, and a Wheeleroo tour at the same time as the Kangaroo tour in October and November. We need the intensity of our games to increase, and we're going to get that this year in Super League. So we had Argonauts, Leeds Rhinos and Halifax, those two in particular, being challenged by the Argonauts, but Leyland Warriors have returned to Super League. Hull FC are making great strides, you know, at the other end of the M62. So I've no doubt we'll be for some blockbuster games. But I never lose sight of this is a disability sport, which happens to be very inclusive. So giving people opportunities to play a sport they love, like rugby league, which is level, literally level, and the chair is a great equaliser. So you know, we're unique in that way. So that's two things, both ends of the game, Super League, intensity, but also the participation. The international series as well will be fantastic.
And in that regard, Martin, just a final point, really. I hope it's come across that this team's literally all over the country. So when it comes to participation, if they like the sound of the sport, which if you've not seen it on YouTube, you should. It's cracking viewing. If you want to get involved, how can people get involved?
So a good start point is the RFL website, which says where the teams are. Disability sport is relatively unique, and people are used to travelling distances to participate. But every club will provide an opportunity and everybody's welcome. We find a way of making it work. You know, it's tough to get into. A chair is expensive, but all the clubs have got accessible chairs for people, and we'll make it work. And, you know, the leadership of the game would listen to anybody, and we're easy to contact if you Google Wheelchair Rugby League, and all welcome.
Martin Coyd there, Chair of England Wheelchair Rugby League. Exciting stuff there from the wheelchair version of the sport. Cracking stuff, and a big good luck to all 23 clubs. Let's talk about League One. That season kicked off this weekend. Everyone apart from Rochdale kicked a ball in anger. There was no postponements, was there? I don't think so. No, that's good news. So there was wins for Newcastle at Coventry. Barrow Raiders won a bit of a thriller against Doncaster. North Wales Crusaders beat the London Scholars. Hunslet 50, West Wales Raiders 10 was the full-time score in Llanelli. And it was Workington Town 24, Keighley Cougars 6. Workington Town there with a cracking scoreline against a fellow promotion candidates. Four tries, exactly. Aaron, come to you for this next bit, talking about League One. Rochdale have obviously announced, I don't think it's been confirmed yet, but the Valencia...
It's subject to RFL approval, yeah.
You've spoke to Dean Buchan at Valencia. What's your thoughts?
Like anything with expansion, you've got to be very careful in not getting carried away. However, I made some pretty salient points about when you compare it to other expansion teams... A lot of stuff in place. You know, they've had a game, all right. They got heavily beaten. It was 600 there, and they estimated around just over 300.
It's not too far from Benidorm, is it?
No, it's on the strip. Yeah, he pointed that out. That I think there's millions of expats in the Valencia region. So, what it allows you to do is there's probably some northern. I mean, most English people who are holidaying in Benidorm from the north of England, aren't they, really? Let's call it how it is. So I think there's the potential there, and that's the key word. He seemed very open and encouraged that they could get in for 2021. I would guess from what I've heard that that's very unlikely at this moment in time. It's going to be Ottawa and nobody else. They may get in the cup. They want to get in the cup. They tried this year. They were rejected. But what was most encouraging is that they're prepared to be patient, and if they do get in, they're going to play a strong, heavily Spanish squad, which, all right, is going to inflict a few beatings upon them.
Most of those Spanish players are playing Elite Un, don't they? So it's not really... Yeah. They're not too far off.
Yeah, and I think he was saying that, similar to what Catalans do and have a second team playing in a local league. So they're certainly trying to do it the right way, you know. There's no definitive right or wrong way to do expansion, but they're not going to come in and try and sign a load of 32, 33-year-old English players and storm through League One in their first season. I hope they get in, because it's logistically doable. You know, part-time players don't need to take time off work. It's a two-hour flight, one-hour time difference. Great away day.
Now, the conference season kicks off this weekend. I know Division 3 has already kicked off, but the whole shebang. And on Wednesday afternoon, to preview the new season, I caught up with League Express's very own. Here's Phil Hodgson.
Well, Phil, a big thank you for joining us. And the NCL will be in full swing from this weekend. And I suppose we should start with the reigning champions, Fat O'Heath. They'll be hosting newly promoted Featherstone Lions. What can we expect in the Prem this season?
I think they are the reigning champions, but the champions of the season so far, you might say, is the rain. because we've had 2 weeks already. The season started 2 or 3 weeks ago, actually. Or it should have started 2 or 3 weeks ago, just with Division 3, which we've spoken about before. But for each of the last 2 weeks in Division 3, the section has been halved. 6 games should have taken place each week, and only 3 took place. But talking about Fatto Heath, yeah, they're launching the defence of their title with a big game against Featherstone Lions, who came up from the First Division last year. Both these teams have good pedigrees in relation to battling games out. Fatto Heath are the champions because they beat West Hull last year in Golden Point. And Featherstone Lions had to play well to beat Standingley in the playoffs. So, and then, of course, we've got West Hull, who are starting off with a very difficult task against at home to Siddle, who are always one of the main players in this competition. And these two met just recently in the Challenge Cup. That should be another thriller.
You know, the Challenge Cup this season has thrown up a fair number of these Premier Division sides. York Acorn are also in action there, hosting Underbank Rangers, of course, who got knocked out last week against Bradford. Rochdale Mayfield, they're taking on the Cumbrians Egremont Rangers this weekend. Yep. So, and
our big teams.
And of course, Wrapbrough Hornets were taking on Hunslet Club Parkside, who, of course, were the team of 2 seasons ago. So the Premier Division is going to be really competitive this year.
Very much so. I mean, you're talking about Wrapbrough Hornets there. Wrapbrough could claim, and I would argue, although not everybody agrees with me, that Wrapbrough were the best team last year because they were the minor premiers, again, top of the division, having achieved more points or amassed more points than any other side from having played each other once at home and once away. So there is an argument that they should be recognised as the champions, having done that, and that the playoffs are something else. And we're not talking about Loch Lane against Pilkington Rex. Loch Lane, again, one of the giants of the amateur game. Pilkington's are as well. And Pilkington's have been promoted from Division 1 as champions. So that should be another cracker.
And Pilkington Rex, like you say, champions of Division 1 last season. And we'll head to Division 1 now, because Division 1's got some big hitters in it, in all fairness as well. The division make up Hull Dockers, Milford, Introse Bridge, Ulton Raiders, Kells. Kells taking on Lee Manners Rangers this weekend. It seems like a big game to me. I mean, there's some big clubs in this division this year.
We talk about big clubs. Some clubs just have the big names, you know, especially to maybe people of a certain vintage like me. Hull Dockers, a massive club, you know, and they've got Milford at home, which is another major side. What is important, and I think we've talked about this when we're looking ahead to the Division 3 season starting, which it hasn't really yet, but it's very important, I believe, to get off to a good start. You certainly don't want to lose your first 3 games, even if they're narrow defeats in hard-fought matches. So there'll be some nerves jangling in all of these games because each and every one of them looks too close to call, really. You've got West Bowling, for example, who were the Division 2 champions last time. On to Wigan St Patrick's, again, one of the massive names who spent most of the time in the Premier Division, actually. So they'll be wanting to get back to the top flight as well. Big derby in Hull, Knight and Warriors against Skirla. Should be very, very tasty, if anything. And then we've got Thornhill against Stanningley. Thornhill were relegated last season, but they've already shown what a big side they are with a Challenge Cup run of their own this time, you know, pulling off a bit of a massive win. And then they're on to Standingley, another iconic club. So people's fight for choice in Division 1.
Division 2 as well, because the Division 3 champions, Wolston Rovers, are at Beverley this weekend. That seems like a big game to kick off Division 2 this season.
Definitely. Beverley were promoted themselves 2 years ago. Beverley's also a very nice place, has a place to go to as well, you know, they're one of those clubs like you or to where you can pop along and spend a whole day maybe in the area and take the match in as well. But that should attract a big crowd, I think, for that game. And again, Wolston will want to make a mark,
And when it comes to, you know, what we're talking about with the big names who are in Division 1, there's some big names in Division 2, really. Bradford, Dudley Hill taking on Crossfields this weekend. Dewsbury Celtic taking on Barrow Island. Hunslet Warriors taking on Clockface Miners. Normanton Knights taking on Dewsbury Moor. And Saddleworth Rangers taking on Wigan St Jude's. We had Wigan St Jude's on the show last week talking about all the cracking stuff that's going on there, not just with Rugby League, but as a community club more generally. So lots of quality work going on here, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch as well at these clubs.
Well, we're talking about clubs here, but you've hit a good point there, Ben. I mean, Wigan St Jude's have long been very strong in their community. You could argue that each and every one of these clubs is, in a sense, bigger than any of the professional clubs, including Super League clubs. And that might sound like a stupid thing to say, they obviously don't attract the same kind of crowds, but they're huge organisations. Each one has got to have a very strong youth and junior structure underneath it. You know, so you've got plenty of people involved, quality people who are volunteers, who know what they're doing. They know how to bring kids through. They know how to do things properly. So it's not just a matter of being good teams on the pitch and being able to, from time to time, pull off shock results, if that's the right word, against professional opposition. But they are very, very strong clubs with people of high quality running them. So it's not just about the season starting now and matches taking place on Saturday. It's about what's going on 52 weeks a year, each and every month, you know, probably 12 hours a day, all these clubs.
Yes, absolutely. And when it comes to, you know, 52 weeks a year, that brings me to your column and your section of the paper, of course, because it is non-stop, because, you know, people forget there's a winter season as well, isn't there, in the community game. So you've been hard at it all year. What's coming up in your world in League Express on Monday?
Well, one thing we'll be talking about, I'll be talking about the President's Cup, which is taking place later, starting off, I think, towards the end of March. And that is contested by teams such as the teachers, the students, the armed forces, the police. There are four teams contesting the men's President's Cup this year and three teams contesting the women's President's Cup, which has been revamped. So that's something that, you know, I really enjoy. Games take place as double headers in the men's competition on Wednesday evenings. I think Saddleworth, Lock Lane and Lee Miners are hosting those, so I will be looking ahead to those, and also the women's competition, which again is very vibrant, and it's really a cracking way to spend Wednesday in spring, you know, to get along to these games, get double headers. You know, it's real entertainment. But just talking about real entertainment, you know, you touched briefly on Division 3 there. Eastmoor, who've not gone too well in recent years, they've had a fantastic start. It's good to see Eastmoor riding high. Second is East Leeds, so won their one game. So they're going head-to-head in Wakefield at Eastmoor on Saturday, and that should be a real early season cracker.
Phil Hodgson there from League Express, and a big good luck to everyone kicking the conference season off. Any other business before we go? Aaron, I've already touched upon what I had down for yours. You've got a new bit in the newspaper. Woo. What have you got coming up in the next month? You must have irons in the fire.
Yeah, something with London's Will Lovell, which I did a few weeks ago. Really good story about just numerous ACL injuries. Had to go play rugby union. Came back to London Scholars. Played for free to get a deal at London Broncos. A real good story. Some other stuff as well.
Good. Back chat's back as well.
It is.
Thursday, Free Sport. Sean Wayne.
He was great. As I mean, he always is, isn't he? You just let him speak.
Let's seamlessly link that into England.
Okay. Sean Wayne has announced his provisional England squad. What have we learned from this announcement?
He isn't picking players on name. He's picking them on form.
Yeah,
and he's not scared to make bold calls.
Just picking one of those players who's been excluded in particular. I hope Jackson Hastings forces his hand and he's thinking between now and the end of the season, and I think he could.
Without giving too much away about what Wayne said on back chat, he says that if he's going to pick someone who is not English, they will have to be absolutely exceptional and a million miles better than what he's got.
Well,
is this where is
Hastings
this,
could certainly do that?
Is this where, if you were part of the Irish Rugby League or the Scottish Rugby League, you'd be looking at birth certificates and that kind of thing?
Yeah.
That,
yeah.
Connor is the. What's going on with you, Connor? It just seems to me that his career's at a crossroads. You know, he got the gig at six. He lasted four games before being moved out of six.
And he got injured on
it. He gets injured, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah.
But then he doesn't get in even a provisional list of England candidates, which I think it was called or something like that, provisional Ashes candidates. You know, he on talent, he should be in that.
Yeah.
But there are reasons he won't.
I'm going to ask something controversial. Does it even matter at this stage?
No, not greatly, because there's a hell of a lot of time to force the coaches thinking.
If you're not in the squad, you might be able to play that. Yeah. It's not like
it's a clue as to who where he's thinking.
Part of me just wonders whether Wayne wants to put a rocket up his backside.
It's a bit like announcing the squad numbers for a club.
I think it's putting a few people on notice as well, isn't it? Saying, look, I've not picked you now because you're just not playing well enough. Whereas before, you might have got in just on the basis of previous year's performances. That ain't happening under my watch. So you start playing well or you're not getting picked.
I'd wager that Sean Wayne is talking to these players and saying exactly that.
I think that squad has proved one thing, that by the time the first Ashes test comes around, you're going to get 17 that are all in form and all playing well. There's not going to be any passengers.
Now, we've got to rush off, but just before we go, Alex, Rugby League World, March's edition. It's here, in my hands.
Look at the cover. Unbelievable scenes.
Absolutely. No bias at all.
No.
Oh, it's Castleford, isn't it?
I hadn't noticed.
Almost like
anything else in there? I mean, there's a good story about the birth of Greece Rugby League in Australia.
There is,
and that
but
stuff.
The big one
in Vietnam.
Is the Chris Nahi one.
Oh, yes.
That
is very
absolutely
good.
Absolutely brilliant. Came out of nowhere. Our international correspondent, Mike Simpson, came up with that, and it's an absolutely brilliant story.
Yeah, buy it for that.
Yeah.
Out now in all good newsagents. And some also bad ones as well. On totalrl.com. You can also buy your copy there too. League Express out on Monday, of course. And for all the latest news, totalrl.com. We're going to go now. Aaron, a big thank you for joining us. Alex, a big thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Ben.
And Matthew Shaw, always a pleasure. And wherever you're going this weekend, make sure you have fun. Bye-bye.